Please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And Darlene.
For the record, I'm Representative Tony Van Bleek, District 35. With me is Representative Pooley and Bruce Anderson. This bill passed the House 51-6 just the other day and is now before you. I might give you a little history of it because it stems back to a bill in 1981 which we passed, which was House Bill 3004. At that time, that bill clearly stated that an art dealer enter into a written contract with the artist. Today, that is being done by majority of conscientious gallery owners. However, if you read those contracts, you will see a wide variety of terminology being imposed upon the artist, and in some cases might even be considered a disadvantage to the artist. At the 1981 bill, the artist yielded on two key items. Those key items was, one, establishing a fiduciary responsibility in terms of treating art as a trust property, and the other was the proof of liability, which is in the current law, but negligence had to be proved. This time we have put those two items in the bill, and this is what they do. A trust is a type of relationship in the handling of funds, establishes a fiduciary responsibility. It's a basically a law of duty. And then the terms are basically set down in the contracts of agreements. The 1981 law, while it held the art dealer liable, the term strictly liable is used in this particular sense to eliminate the proof of negligence by the artist, which was almost impossible to prove if there was something destroyed their artwork. And we are talking about original art here. We're not talking about reproductions. We're talking about something that's been created by somebody, in many cases a one-time only type of artwork. The changes we have proposed in this bill are currently in the Washington law, almost word for word. California, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Texas, Ohio, and Wisconsin. These are states that also have a very large art community. And this was the reason we put these in here, because we wanted to, one, establish the trust responsibility. What that entails basically is the fact that if something happens to an art gallery, having the funds in a trust account that belong to the artist, their proportion of the agreed amount of commission, they would be sure to get that. It's not an unusual relationship. It's established in law offices. It's established in labor unions. It's established in many places to protect the funds that belong to those people. Also, the tracking of their artwork so that their artwork does not fall into any kind of receivership negotiations. The term strict liability is not a new term, it is a legal term, and basically is one that really stems back from common law. And any of you that are familiar with the term legally called prospective bailment will know that to be strictly liable for something is a term used there. It goes back to that particular kind of law. All this does is to say that in being strictly liable for this particular piece of artwork that may be in your possession while you sell it, is giving it about the same kind of category or trust that we would give to an airline in protecting their baggage or your car in a parking lot, because that is a strictly liable often shows up on those kind of items.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Hypothetical Brock. Here for Representative Van Bleek. Now, let's take a little art dealership in the corner of a little building down in some coastal town. We see a lot of them down there. But anyway, some reveler from the big city is down there and gets a little too much to drink and drives wildly down the street, veers off the street, runs through the window of the art store and munches up completely a work of art that's there on consignment. It would be my reading of the language of what you just mentioned that the art dealer would be strictly liable for the loss of that painting.
That's correct.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yes, I represent Van Fleet. I've heard you describe the trust fund, but normal transactions were normal business relationships. Usually they rely upon a contract instead of putting some additional reliability on. You're saying there, what is special between an artist selling artwork and the difference of someone that is producing another product and sign in or can sign in under some contractual relationship? Why can't a contract deal with a situation? Why are we asking the legislature to specifically single out this type of business transaction? Why?
I think the main reason is that you're dealing with something that is truly a creative piece of work. The gallery owners basically make their living off of the artist, and of course it is a relationship that wants to be kept alive and established, but the galleries also are ones that can refuse to take artwork in. But mostly to protect...
Well, this bill didn't change that. It didn't insist they take artwork.
Mainly what it does is protect the funds as they're collected to make sure that if something happened to the gallery, at least the artist gets those funds back. It's very much like the trust of agreement of a labor union that has their pension funds in there to make sure that nothing that the labor union executives do basically would jeopardize those funds.
Nor the employers, for that.
Nor the employers.
It's a joint trust.
It's a joint trust.
But
in this particular case...
I guess your example, I think, isn't very good because you're talking about certain money set and is set and paid in lieu of wages that is indeed the property of the wage earner. In other words, between the two parties, they have a contract, and they're setting it aside for a third person. Here you have a party that's selling and a party that's buying. What's the difference there?
Basically, I think you're protecting the funds that belong to the artist in this particular case as their portion of the agreement of the contract.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is, why is that different than any other business transaction in the state? That's my problem. I really don't see the difference there, other than the fact that I agree that I love art. And I guess I'm having a hard time determining where a contract can't provide the same relation, other than the fact you're saying it does escape certain receiverships if they go into bankruptcy.
I think that's the primary reason. That's the primary reason that other states have adopted that language, Senator Day.
All right, strict liability. When they get into a contract, then they can do they not hold at arm's length on who is going to be liable for the? Don't they discuss that? Don't they enter that kind of an agreement? How the protection of that particular property is turned?
I think if there's an example of a contract here, we'll show you, and it does not. It usually excludes a lot of those things, and that's why the term strict liability was used. And it's very interesting that these other states have decided to use that kind of language. Because of the unusual kind of relationship, really, that an artist has.
What is that relationship, you think? Tell me what you think so unusual.
Well, I think that it's an unusual relationship because basically the gallery owners basically can reject taking works in. That part isn't as unusual as probably rejecting an assignment of garments. But once that's in your possession, it's maybe the only piece of work that you have of that type. You cannot reproduce that piece again. That's not the same as in other kinds of items that you negotiate. You're dealing with very creative material here and things that basically can never be replaced once lost. And that's the reason for that relationship.
So your point is that if they fail to have the proper insurance and what have you, even though they may not be the guilty party, like Senator Fry's example, there is some duty to insure the protection. Is that the point?
There's no mention of insurance here, but I think in good business practices and with commission rates where they are...
No mention, but I'm going to tell you this. If I were a business, I'd sure as hell go buy it.
I think I probably would, too, if I was a good business person.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay.
Bruce,
you want to
go ahead?
Of course. Whoever's next...
Could I back up and address the Senator?
The first thing, you can back up and state your name for the record, please.
My name is Bruce Anderson.
Good.
The relationship between the artist and the gallery is unique in as much as it's a continuing relationship of consignment. Currently, Senator Fry's example, that driver from Portland would be, his automobile would be insured by law for PL&PD. There would be funds available for that gallery owner to collect from that driver. I recently consigned cattle to the Portland auction yard. I was paid out of a custodial account in 2 days and paid 4% interest, and the cattle were insured. If you consign an automobile in Oregon, you hold title to it until it's, and there's a code of ethics in the Automobile Dealers Association. They have some in-house, the common habits of the business arena protect each party. In this case, you have floating around in Oregon $5-6 million a year in artist money without any controls on it. This bill would bring us in line with standard business practices. The artist has no recourse. Currently, they can't trace the money. You get adhesion contracts. We have it right now. Existing law requires a contract. That was compromises that we hammered out with these same people in 1981. And this is being ignored in general. There are contracts around that we have examples of that are adhesion contracts. These are non-negotiable contracts. Commission structure is up to 50%. These are not negotiable commissions. It's a take-it-or-leave-it situation. The artist does not have another used car lot to go to on 82nd Street. They need the galleries more than the galleries need them. So you have an unequal bargaining position. What we're saying here is that if you put it, write it down, the gallery can write their own terms. But no longer can they say, when the artist asks for a contract, don't you trust me? Now, we've had failures in Oregon of galleries. We've had at least two since the 81 compromise. And currently there are lawsuits involved with these galleries where work has been sold and the artist hasn't been paid. This is not an uncommon. The trust clause in this bill does not specifically require a separate account. We would hope that that's what they would do. By establishing this trust property, it allows the artist to sue for a violation of a duty imposed by law, which is the tort law, as opposed to just being able to sue for a violation of a duty imposed by contract, particularly when there's no contract exists. Senator Terry assumes that there will be a contract. But we're seeing right now for the last 4 years that they refuse to give contracts. So when you don't have a contract, how do you trace the money?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator.
I'm beginning to understand this a little more. But I guess that if we were to look at a law that required a contract, you're saying the current law requires a contract. Is that right? And it's being ignored?
Because the penalty was compromised out. So consequently,
there's no penalty
in the existing law, so that clause is ignored.
Well, I wonder if there was a penalty for a contract, would you still feel a trust fund was necessary?
Certainly, because who can object to protecting the artist's money from unforeseen circumstances unbeknownst to the gallery owner, whether it's a divorce, whether it's a bankruptcy. Now, you hear that they're all hanging by a thread. That's more reason, in my opinion, to protect the artist with that responsibility of that clause. How else? If the artist does not have the funds, you know, and they're non-hostile by nature. So, you know, it's very difficult for them to even exert themselves to trust. If they had the money, these are all assumptions that they're going to go.
Let me ask you a question, if I can, Mr.
Yes, Senator.
You gave examples of car sales or cattle sales. In either of those cases, are there trust funds set up for that money?
The Portland Livestock Market maintains a custodial fund.
But not a trust fund?
No.
There is a difference on a custodian.
There is a The money is paid out of this custodial fund, and they clear that, you know, every 7 days. We're in the case of an art gallery. There is a law in effect now. Some people have it, some people don't. In Washington, you'll see consignment sheets where they say it's in trust. Some don't even pay any attention to it. Also in California. And that would make it easier for them to trace. It would isolate it from, you know. But even without the trust fund, showing it as trust property puts the artist in a favored position, rather than just being owed the money as a common, you know, creditor.
One of the comments on the floor of the House by one attorney was stating that there would need to be individual trust accounts set up for the artist. That is not true. There just needs to be simply one account set up. It used the same principles that a law office follows in establishing a law office trust account, where they keep a set of books and trust funds are put in and recorded, and then as checks are issued, they're issued out of that trust fund to various clients that they have. The same thing is in this particular kind of a trust account. What you're doing is you're simply keeping, most galleries keep a set of books recording the piece of art and the name of the artist, the value established, and I would hope that they do. And then the relationship of when they pay out the monies to the artist. This simply would record then the amount of money that artist has coming, and there would be a traceable ledger then that it says this is a trust fund, it is a single check account that you write your checks out against. It's not a burdensome type of requirement in order to protect those funds from any other outside sources in any kind of legal problems. That's why it's been hard for me to see why that has been such a big item to some of the galleries when we called around and we talked to galleries in other states. This particular language in this law has not caused the galleries any problems. In fact, we did not hear of any. And we also checked in with some of the artist organizations in Washington to see if that had basically caused any problems. So it's been hard for us to understand why this language, which was the original language in 3004 in 1981, we changed it, backed away because there was a large outcry from the galleries at that time. Since that time, things have occurred that have made the art community at least wanting to put this language in as a feature of protection on their side of the fence. An art gallery has considerable latitude in how they deal with their clients. The commission is set by the galleries. It reflects their business principles to make their particular overhead and money. At the same time, the artists are the ones that are supplying the fruits of their labor, and that is not replaceable.
Madam Chair.
Senator Barr.
Well, I think that the concept of making this trust property is good. I can see a lot of problems that might be resolved by doing that, but I have a couple other questions, Madam Chair, that have to do with other things in the bill. One is on line 33. You're making the failure there Class C misdemeanor, and I don't know how many district attorneys are going to be interested in helping you out on that deal. So I'm wondering how have you considered making it a civil penalty. Instead of a criminal offense.
Yes.
Is that considered?
Yes, that's
okay.
Fine.
All right. And the other question is, what if the gallery and the unknowing artist, and I imagine this would not be uncommon, when I say unknowing, an artist who does not know what the provisions of the law might be, enter into a contract where the liability of the gallery is based on negligence or something less than strict liability. Would it be your position that the statute would control over the contract language in terms of liability? Because this doesn't provide for that contingency. I can see it happening.
Well, we're assuming they're not violating law by not writing a contract. That's one of the things we think that this will make sure that there are contracts, even though the law stated in 1981 some galleries don't write contracts. And that could be as much an ignorance on the part of the artists as it is on the gallery owner, so that this would cement that in a much better shape, I think, than you'd see both the contract and the liability clause, which would clear the air.
I'm not sure it seemed to probably got his question answered.
There's no coercion clause in the bill where that cannot be waived.
Well, where's that? I didn't.
Maybe it wasn't affected, so it wouldn't be in the printout.
Oh, what? Where is it?
There wouldn't be, according to legislative counsel, it wouldn't, unless that particular section was affected by amendments, it wouldn't appear.
So you're saying that is current law?
That's current law.
It's in the current statutes now.
Okay, we'll check that out to make sure. No, it is in current statutes. Okay, Senator Fry has to go. Darlene, do you want to say anything?
And then I do want to
get the people up who have amendments.
Just very briefly, sat and listened to all the testimony when it was in front of the House Concerning Business Affairs Committee. There have been inequities. I think the example of the fact that there have not been contracts when the law calls for contracts, the gallery owner does have the upper hand, and I think the contract I passed out is a good example. If you look at what that contract calls for liability under the bottom section 4, as well as, you know, what the price is, and if you pay particular attention to section 2 in the bottom, there's two section 4s if you look at the bottom section 4. I've had a number of letters from people in my district, from Clackamas Community College, the artists there, the Clackamas County Arts Council. And I have also, there was an article in the Lake Oswego Review. And the interesting thing, I guess, like most laws, you always write a law for a few people. And most gallery owners, and I suspect most of those gallery owners that are here today, this law will not affect them at all. I can name several galleries that I go to that do exactly what's called for in the law. And all we're really asking is that the relationship between the artist and the gallery owner is treated as a business. And if you saw even the wood display that we had down on the floor about a month ago, and you saw some of those pieces, that's really a person's tremendous amount of time and effort, and that is their living, and that's how they make their living. And not to have that protected as they put it in a gallery, either for display or for sale, I think is almost criminal. I think that has to be protected. I think their share, the 50% or 60% they get off of a sale, should be protected through a trust purpose. We did, in the House side, make a couple amendments that was made together with some of the gallery owners. We did put when we asked that they shall furnish names. Most gallery owners ask for their names, so when they do a mailing, you know, they have their names as well as the artist's names. And we did, some gallery owners wanted that at 500, we did put it at 100. Because if you have it up too high, you knock out whole classes of art, original art. And particularly, I think, in the porcelains, pottery, prints, if you go too high there. But what we didn't want to do is have them fiddled with, you know, postcards or greeting cards for $1 or $1.50. Some of the smaller things or some of those items that are mass produced, even though they may not all look alike there, and say it's mass produced, so we wanted to make sure at that $100 level we would include all classes of art.
Okay, thank you very much. Nels Moon. And whoever else Nels wants to bring. Are you going to present the amendments?
No, I
think I want to.
You
want to
do that first?
Well, I have a list, and you're first on the list, and Steve DeCorey and Christopher Thomas is last, and I would like you to get the amendments on the table.
Senator, I know a lot of you, it's important. I have another committee I just have to go to. It's on the water, and the governor's called me to his office, and I will try to take all the testimony because I know it's an important bill.
Yes, so.
But I want to tell you one thing. I was reading section four, and I'm not impressed by it. I understand why the artists are upset.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm representing the Association for Fine Art. Give an idea of how much time you would like to allot to us.
Oh, well, we probably have
10 after 3, I guess.
10 after 3, everybody's going.
Could I ask, we have a man who's come from a brand that he'd be allowed to testify. I do have copies of the amendments.
Yes.
And I'd rather not go through the details of those now. It would take all the rest of the time we have.
They are -3 amendments, and they are essentially a rewrite of the bill, right?
No, I don't think they're essentially a rewrite of the bill. I think what they are is a... I think all the concepts, basically the concepts that are in the bill have been amended so that they say the same thing but not the same words. For example, the trust fund, rather than setting up a trust fund, I think we get at the problem that was raised by the proponents of the bill without getting into all the legal technicalities that I think anybody wants to get into regarding trust fund. We did also drop penalties. I guess that would be a substantive change. And we've made the strict liability admission to be contracted rather than requirement in every way. And it's a brief run through of them. I'd be happy, and I would drop them off ahead of time to all the members of the committee. I'd be happy to...
Yeah, we have... There are -3 amendments, and we have them.
If Mr. Liu and Mr. Morandi from LeGrand could present...
I'm happy to do that. I guess the only thing I'd say is we could schedule another... I guess we're going to have to look at a... I don't know whether we can schedule a night meeting or whether we can talk about next Tuesday.
That's whatever.
To get some additional testimony from people about. You just got to know, folks, that the session has gone on almost every day now until 5-10 minutes of one, where we're really straight up in session on voting on bills, and that's why we're sort of squeezed in by committees that have to meet.
I understand. If I could have Mr. Morandi testify, I think that would pretty much fill the rest of my time.
Okay, and then we'll reschedule. Let's reschedule that next Tuesday.
Great, thank you very much.
For those of you who want to come back next Tuesday.
7 o'clock?
No. Daytime.
Oh, daytime. All right.
1 o'clock. We'll try it again.
All right.
And Tom, if you want to come forward, then we'll make sure you don't have to come back.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Morandi. I'm a professor of art at Eastern Oregon State College and a sculptor. Additionally, depending on your point of view, I'm either the genius who created those lovely bronze wings that enhanced the south entrance to the Capitol, or on the half-wit that stuck out that god-awful chunk of metal over the back door. My opinion on that fluctuates with my frame of mind as well, so. I'm here today not to speak to that, however, but the amendments to the bill proposed. Aspects of this bill as proposed will, to my mind, discourage marginal fringe galleries from exhibiting artists' work. This indeed would give some pause to the get-in, make-a-buck-and-get-out enterprises that charlatans and snake oil salesmen are partial to. But it would also, I believe, substantially curtail the first exposure opportunities of young or emerging artists. Nonprofit artist groups, theater lobbies, restaurants, storefront galleries, are going to question the advisability of showing art when trusts, liability insurance, and extensive paperwork is required. In addition, I believe that the liability section will subtly but directly place parameters on the nature of work accepted by galleries for exhibition. And by that I mean artists who do physically fragile work or experimental work, or work that is not always commercially viable, but nonetheless aesthetically significant.
Can I ask you a question about that? Then why wouldn't you agree on a lower liability to that? If you, even though it might be strict, if you had a fragile art, couldn't then the artist agree that that would be something?
I might agree to that. An artist sitting to my left or right might not.
That's essentially where you are now, though, if you're doing it by contract.
Yes, and I think that at this stage, and historically it is proven, at least in my experience, that it seems to be the best way to do it with in-house contracts. I would rather take a risk and show a piece of work that I believed in, mm-hmm. even though it was, let's say, fragile.
Yeah, I'm going to ask the lawyers about the current law, I mean, the bill is proposed, whether that would permit you with a particular piece of work before we all shake our heads, I'm going to check out with the lawyers here and find out to make sure that, because who sets, I mean, it's a mutual decision on what the value of that piece is.
No, the artist will typically set the value.